Parents ask their kids all the time if they'd like to join them for a trip. They range from the short and easy, you know, want to go to the store with me, to the long and arduous. We'll focus on that second category today. Writer James Campbell asked his teenage daughter Aiden to go to the wild interior of Alaska with him. She said yes, three different times. The story of those journeys is told in Jim Campbell's book, Braving It, A Father, A Daughter, and an Unforgettable Journey into the Alaskan Wild. James Campbell obviously writes about the outdoors for Outside Magazine, National Geographic Adventure, and similar publications. He's written two other books about people facing the elements. He lives in Wisconsin. If you've ever spent a winter there, I have. You know it bears some similarity to Alaska. Jim Campbell, thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
Jeffrey, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
And Aiden, since I don't have a bio for you, I want to say hi to you first and tell us what you're doing these days.
Hi, I'm actually in Boulder, Colorado right now, so speaking from the mountains.
All right. Are you in college now, or are you still in high school?
No, I'm going to be taking a gap year before college next year, hopefully for an adventure of my own, this time without my sidekick, I guess.
Okay. That's a good place to start. Jim, Braving It is something of a follow-up to an earlier book called The Final Frontiersman, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Final Frontiersman was my first book. It was about my cousin, Haimo Kortz, who is one of the last year-round homesteaders in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which is 19.5 million acres. He went up there in the 70s as part of the coming into the country generation, moved 130 miles above the Arctic Circle and 100 miles from the nearest neighbor, and eventually married, and he and his wife raised two daughters out there. And that book is the story of his life and their lives. And I spent 2 years researching and writing the story and living with them off and on and coming home and telling Aiden stories about it.
So Haimo obviously wants to live there, he and his wife Edna, but so what's the appeal to you, though, of the Arctic? It's not appealing enough to want to live there, clearly, but you probably have some family attention in there, too.
Yeah, well, Haimo happens to be my cousin, and I remember very clearly growing up with him. He was always talking about going north, and one day he did. And I was filled with admiration and pride, and I vowed then and there that I was going to do exactly the same thing when I came of age. Well, when I turned 18, I went east, and no mountain man in the making ever goes east. So by writing the book, both of these books, I've been able to live out at least a portion of my own dream.
Aiden, tell us what your dad told you about Alaska when he came back from his trips there.
Well, he came back with these stories of Alaska and great wilderness. And I've grown up in the outdoors, and Wisconsin's a beautiful place, plenty of wild country there. But I always dreamed of something greater. I dreamed of big wilderness and grizzly bears and rushing rivers, rushing glacial streams. And so when my dad came back, I started to have these ideas of our own adventure. And I made him promise me that one day he would take me to Alaska with him.
All right, so he. How long did the promise drag on, though?
About 10 years.
All right, so Jim, what were you waiting for?
Well, I was waiting for the point when I thought she was ready for it. Obviously, you don't go into the wilderness, any wilderness, particularly the Alaskan wilderness, unprepared. And over those years, we'd done canoeing trips, kayaking, backpacking, camping. And kind of our goal was, my wife and I, to acquaint Aiden with the outdoors. And when she turned 15, I figured that she was ready for Alaska. And she proved that she was.
But now your mom apparently had some reservations about this. Aiden, tell us about those.
Yeah, my mom was initially very scared. And she told my dad, "You're not taking my daughter up to Alaska. You know, I let you go, but you're not taking my daughter up there." And it was very hard for me, and for her, I expect, because when I was up there, I had very limited connections to the outside world. We brought a satellite phone for emergencies, and I could call my mom once per trip just to tell her that I loved her and that I was safe, and that was it. So she had reason to be worried. There are many threats up there, and I didn't have the resources that I have here.
Jim, apparently you'd been talking about a river trip, which is what the third trip ended up being for some time. But this, the first trip up there turned into some quality and rugged family time with cousin Haimo. What happened?
Well, Haimo had called. He'd come out of the bush, and he was in Fairbanks for 2 months, and he'd called, and he'd said, listen, I'd love for you to come up. Our cabin was washed away when the river rerouted itself in the spring, and I need to build a new one this summer, and I need to build it fast. He said, are you interested in coming up? And I said, you know, under normal circumstances, I'd come up in a second, but Aiden and I have this dream, you know, of doing this backpacking and river trip. And I said, so let me think about it. So I went up to Aiden, and I said, Aiden, what do you think? This isn't exactly what we were planning, but would you like to come up and build this cabin? It's going to be hard work. It isn't going to be what you dreamed of, but it will be a rewarding experience, I think. So she contemplated it for a while, and 2 days later she said yes. So I called Haimo back, and he had his own reservations. He said, you know, I raised 2 teenage daughters in the wilderness, and it ain't the place for teenage girls. He said, I think you're crazy for doing it. I think you're crazy for suggesting it, but I need you. So, yeah, I said, you know, we're a package deal. So he said, okay, come on up. And we worked hard, I mean really hard, for a month straight.
Why does Haimo live in such a remote place? I mean, what satisfaction does he get out of being essentially, what, 80 miles from his nearest neighbor?
Yeah, well, you know, that's a really good question. Initially, when he was a young man, he went up there for the adventure. And he found lots of adventure. But now that place, it's his home. That's where he raised his daughters. It's the place that he and his wife call home, and he's 60 years old now, so while he still leads an adventurous life, he's not pursuing adventure anymore. That's just the place that he and his wife are now familiar with, acquainted with, and love.
It's a really rugged existence. We'll get further into some of the details of what life is like from the 3 trips that Jim Campbell and daughter Aiden took up to Alaska, well into the interior, in the book Braving It, A Father, A Daughter, and an Unforgettable Journey into the Alaskan Wild. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange with Jim and Aiden and you in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Jim Campbell is our guest on the Exchange. He is an outdoor writer. He's written for Outside Magazine, National Geographic Adventure, and so on. He's written 3 books. The latest is called Braving It, A Father, A Daughter, and an Unforgettable Journey into the Alaskan Wild, where instead of just saying, honey, you want to come to the store with me, he invited his teenage daughter to Alaska. And they took 3 trips there together, and we're talking not just to the cities, but way, way out in the bush in the Arctic Circle. You can join us as we talk with both Jim and Aiden about the trips. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So the original idea for some kind of a river trip turned into building a cabin. Aiden, how did that idea strike you?
Well, I can tell you, when we were building the cabin, that was no river trip. I had an idea of an adventure and a spiritual experience, and what I got was a lot of work. But I realized how rewarding that work can be on that first trip, and it took some time. Initially, I was peeling poles in a clearing by myself, 25-foot poles, using a draw knife, which is a blade with 2 handles. And I was lonely, I was exhausted by the work, and I wanted nothing more than to go home, I think.
And you pull a draw knife toward yourself, too, don't you?
Yeah, you do, so it's also very dangerous. Luckily, my dad and Haimo had shown me the proper technique, but there are some risks involved, and you're 200 miles from a hospital, so.
Okay, yeah, that's a long way out. So let's hear your view, though, because your dad had been to Alaska before you had. What were your first impressions when you got out there? I mean, way out there.
Yeah, well, it's 20 million acres of raw wilderness. And so it's an amazing experience. You're filled with complete and utter joy at being surrounded by this beauty. But what comes with that is the risk of being out there. You have grizzly bears, you have the river, you have hypothermia. You always have the risk of, do I have enough food? And so when we were out there, we were living in our tent. I was living outside, out of my tent.
and we were fishing for our food. Every night we went to the river, and we'd fish for grayling. You build the fire, and then you work, and it takes a lot of work to build that cabin. It was a long haul.
Jim, we need to hear more about the dangerous critters, and in this case, I'm not talking about the bears, but the mosquitoes. What is it like in the Alaskan outback in the summertime?
Well, Aiden writes a blog at grittygal.com, and she says the real beasts of the northern wild are the mosquitoes. We were out there in the interior for the worst bug season in the interior in 40 years. And because of the people don't equate mosquitoes with Alaska, but particularly Arctic Alaska, but because of the permafrost, when the ice and snow melts, it has nowhere to go. The ground doesn't absorb it, so you have these ephemeral pools and ponds everywhere, and mosquitoes use the opportunity to hatch by the trillions. And, you know, they drive caribou herds to the brink of madness and drove us occasionally to the brink of madness.
Do you have to wear netting around your head and that sort of stuff?
Yeah. Head netting is essential. So it's hot, and that's another thing people don't realize about the Arctic. It can get into the low to mid-80s in the summer. And so you're working hard, cutting trees, limbing them, bucking them, dragging them out of the woods, and in Aiden's case, then peeling them, then dragging them to the cabin site, and then beginning to build the cabin. And you're doing this all under the hot sun and with mosquitoes surrounding you.
How big a first aid kit did you guys have with you?
We had a large first aid kit, and that's the point I always try to make is, you know, there were certainly people who wondered about my sanity, wondered about our sanity. You know, why would you ever bring your 15-year-old daughter into the wilderness? So we prepared long and hard for the trip. You know, we talked about safety in grizzly country. We worked with, you know, bear spray, and we had a big emergency kit in case something went wrong.
Aiden, what was your greatest concern once you got situated and got a chance to look at the landscape and figure out what was what?
Definitely the grizzly bears. I was working in a clearing by myself, and the entire time I had bear on the brain. And so I had a bear bells, but apparently those don't help you very much. And so I decided I was going to sing to myself. And so the entire time while I was working, I was singing to myself to ward off the bears. And at one point, Haimo and I were talking. He said, "What was that noise this morning?" And I said, "Well, you know, I was singing to scare off the bears." And he said, "Oh, God, that was a horrible noise. I'd go running away, too."
Well, not a music major, I'm thinking.
No, probably not.
So did you ever see any bears, though, Aiden?
Yeah, I did. Not on that trip, but on our last trip. We saw a sow and two cubs. A grizzly bear actually had a pretty close encounter. And then when we got to the Arctic Ocean, to Airy Island, we were actually trapped on an island with a polar bear. And my dad told me I'd be lucky to see a polar bear. Well, I got lucky.
Well, not lucky in that sense, though. Yeah, there's a picture of the polar bear in the book, quite a few pictures, actually, that come along with the book Braving It from Jim and Aiden Campbell. So, Jim, the building of the cabin, I mean, we got some idea from Aiden about the use of the draw knife and getting the bark off the poles and stuff. I mean, did you have any chainsaws or any sorts of more modern tools to speed the work up a little bit?
Well, all we had, we had a chainsaw, and that was our only tool that wasn't a manual tool. So certainly that helped, but nevertheless, you know, it was a month of really hard work, and there certainly would have been better, faster ways of doing it. But that's just that's the way of life out there. You try to keep it simple.
Aiden had mentioned her own feelings about the work. Were you getting a little peeved at times with the teenage stick-to-itiveness or lack thereof?
Well, yeah, initially, virtually the first day, Aiden had a, and she's not a bellyacher, she is not a complainer, but she had, kind of a mini breakdown where she was really unhappy and said to me, you know, "Dad, right now I'm very, very miserable." And I said, "Well, just hang in there, it will get better." And she did, and I give her a ton of credit for her, a ton of credit for it. She realized, as she said before, that it was a rewarding experience, and she knuckled down, worked hard, and I think she took great satisfaction from seeing that cabin rise.
Bear concerns aside, Aiden, what were some of the daily pressures? I mean, we're talking about working in pretty much nonstop daylight, right? Plus heat, plus mosquitoes, so on.
Yeah, well, I was plagued by the mosquitoes. I was worried about the bears. And I was lonely out there. I didn't have any female companionship. And I was disconnected from my friends at home. You know, we always have social media, so we're always connected. But when I was out there, I didn't have that as my refuge. And so I realized that I had to find a refuge from something else. And I started to take refuge in nature. And now that is my refuge. When I'm feeling lonely, when I'm feeling stressed, I don't turn to Facebook. I go outside and I take a walk.
Did that first trip roughly measure up to expectations you had for it?
Yeah, actually, it did turn into a great adventure. But it made me realize probably the most important lesson, that to pursue your passion, you have to have a lot of grit, and you have to be willing to stick with it. And I think I had this initial conception that I could just be in the wilderness without necessarily having to work for it. And it was a lot of work, but I remember this one point in which I was fishing for grayling on the Colleen River. And it was probably 10 at night, but the sun was still up. And I just had this feeling of complete and utter joy about being out there. And I felt alive. And I continued to have that experience when I was picking berries on the tundra or I was making a fire in the morning. And I realized that I felt alive in Alaska. And when I came home, I actually longed for Alaska. When I was in Alaska, I longed for home. And when I came home, I longed for Alaska.
We have talked so far just about one of the three trips that Aiden Campbell took with her father, James Campbell, to Alaska, to way out in the wilderness. Story that James Campbell tells in the book, Braving It, A Father, A Daughter, and an Unforgettable Journey into the Alaskan Wild. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. If you have some Alaska stories of your own to share, we'd like to hear those. Peter in Ashland, welcome to the exchange.
Greetings. Hi, Jimmy and Aiden. This is Peter Wilhelm.
Peter, hello.
I'm so tickled to hear this interview because I was just talking about Haimo the other day to somebody, and of course I routinely think about you guys, and so I really, in the name of time, I'm just going to go to Aiden and say, Aiden, that someday you're mom's cousin, and someday we're going to meet you. I look forward to, and I want, for the sake of, I guess I really want to hear what you would say this adventure has done to changing the views or creating what you're going to do in your future.
All right. Thanks for that, Peter. Appreciate it.
Well, I think that to realize your dreams, you need to be bold. That's what I learned. And I needed to be pushed outside of my comfort zone. And my dad gave me that extra push. But from now on in my future, I'm going to need to find that in myself. And I'm going to need to tell myself that I am competent, that I have the skills, and that I can be independent. And my dad was very supportive of me on that trip. He pushed me outside my comfort zone many times. And I initially resented him for that. But later I realized that that was the only way I was going to get through that. And so now, as an adult, I think I need to find that courage in myself.
So speaking of pushing outside the comfort zone, the dust jacket cover of the book, Braving It, shows the two of you fording a stream. You're about knee-deep in water with huge packs on. Jim, how heavy the packs? How cold the water?
Well, you know, those streams are fed by glaciers, so the water is almost, you barely want to step in it. So it is brutally cold. I had a 75-pound pack and an 11-pound shotgun, and Aiden had a 60-pound pack. And people often wonder, well, why the big packs? And well, when you're in Arctic Alaska, you got to prepare for all kinds of different weather. So you have to bring winter gear, and thankfully we did. We experienced the coldest summer in the Arctic in the past 30 years, and there were many mornings we woke up to snow. So, so it was arduous, and I've had 6 knee operations, and I think I would not have gotten through it without ibuprofen, and there were a few times where I had to add some weight to Aiden's pack because I was really ailing.
Wow, the old vitamin I, always a good thing to have along.
The vitamin I, right.
So trip number two, as this begins to take shape, I love the descriptions of the talks that you, Jim, had with Elizabeth, your wife. How did those go?
Well, people always ask, what about Elizabeth? And believe me, Elizabeth is no shrinking violet. She is a mountain girl, and, well, she lives in Wisconsin now, but she was a mountain girl. And for our honeymoon, we actually went to New Guinea and backpacked across New Guinea, and she got malaria there. So she is anything, but daunted by the woods. But, she was frightened, and what I needed to do was convince her that I was prepared, that Aiden was prepared, and that we were prepared. And I think when we managed to do that, she gave us her blessing.
So we're talking now a winter trip. This is November in the Arctic Circle, so no mosquitoes and no bathing in the stream either. Aiden, how daunting was that to you, and what did the weather feel like when you landed in Fairbanks?
Well, it was completely different than summer, because in summer you have probably 70-degree weather, and then you have the never-setting sun. And in winter, you have 40 below every day, and then you have this faint gray light, because when we were there, the sun set, and then it doesn't come back up till January. So we were, it was lonely at times, but what made it significant for me and what made me one of my favorite trips was that I was there with Edna, Haimo's wife.
All right. She sounds like a really interesting person. A little resistant, I gather, from the way you write about it, Jim, to having you guys there at first.
Yeah, she was. I think when I was writing The Final Frontiersman, I might have been, I came up with kind of Western notions of conversation, and Edna is a Siberian Yupik Eskimo from St. Lawrence Island. She grew up in a little whaling village of Savunga, and Haimo hunted bowhead whales with the Yupik people there, and eventually they married, and she joined him in the interior. But when I was writing The Final Frontiersman, I asked a lot of questions that she probably considered intrusive, and later I understood that, but when I told her, we talked about my coming back and my bringing my daughter, she was really hesitant, and understandably. But she befriended Aiden, and it was it was so wonderful to see that bond grow.
Aiden, tell us about that. It sounds like you and Edna had settled into a bit of a daily routine in that winter visit.
Yeah, Edna was both my friend and my mentor while I was up there, and she taught me how to butcher a caribou at 35 below. She taught me how to identify tracks in the snow. She taught me how to read the river ice, the colors of the river ice, and how to listen for open water. And more than anything, she taught me that a woman could be just as competent in the wilderness as any man could. And that was an amazing experience for me, because I had seen Haimo, I had heard of his adventures, but when I saw what Edna could do, then I was really inspired, because I thought I could do this too.
You mentioned 35 below. I mean, I can just hear teeth chattering from listeners across this region, and there probably is no temperature below about 65 here now. The things that you do just have to be so different just to be able to stay alive. I mean, you can't stand in one place for a long time. Jim, tell us about the Arctic Oven.
The Arctic Oven is a double-walled tent, a 10-by-10 tent, that was our home away from home when we were there, with a tiny little undependable fickle wood stove that Aiden and I cursed many a night when the fire would go out and we'd have to wake up, and build another fire. But I think maybe a detail I neglected to tell Aiden when we went up there in winter was that we would not be living in the cabin with Haimo-Adenda. That we would be living in the tent. On a couple of really cold nights, we went into the cabin, but, you know, their cabin's tiny. It's 14 by 16, and that is their living space, and we wanted to give them their privacy. So Aiden and I had the little tent, and that was quite an experience.
So, Aiden, is it the kind of thing where, you know, staying in the bush is fun in the winter because you know you're not going to be there forever? I mean, could you imagine doing this long term, or was it okay because it was short term?
Well, I think I actually wanted to stay at points there, especially because of my friendship with Edna. I felt like I had cultivated a home for myself, and I was happy to go home. You know, I love Wi-Fi. I like running water. I like to take a shower. But when I was in the bush, I really loved that experience, and she was very much a mother to me. When we were in the cabin, we'd talk, and she'd tell me about her girls and their life in the bush, and I'd tell her about home and my sisters and my friends and my mom. So I think I cultivated a life for myself up there, too.
It's a very interesting life to read about, too. The book is called Braving It, A Father, A Daughter, and an Unforgettable Journey into the Alaskan Wild. Jim and Aiden Campbell went up together, father and daughter, on three separate occasions. We'll talk about the rest of trip number two and talk about trip number three just a bit when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange. Your phone calls and emails welcome. We return in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is James Campbell and Aiden Campbell, his daughter. James is an outdoor writer. He's written many articles for the likes of Outside Magazine and National Geographic Adventure, and now three books. His latest is called Braving It. It's about going with daughter Aiden to the wild in Alaska on three separate occasions, something of a rite of transition for Aiden in a sense, but some bonding time as well with the whole backdrop of one of the harshest places on Earth, or at least in this country, to live in. Join us on the Exchange if you have some perceptions you'd like to share with us, some stories of Alaska of your own, or some questions for the guests. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So Aiden had just mentioned liking Wi-Fi. Jim, there's a story in here about the effort you had to go through just so Edna, your cousin's wife, could call her daughter and granddaughter on Skype. I mean, how rigorous a process was this?
That's one of, I think, in my opinion, one of the funniest moments in the book. It's really hard. I should say that, satellite internet has come to the Alaskan bush. Haimo never wanted it, but Edna, their oldest daughter, had a child, and Edna wanted to be able to Skype with her granddaughter, who was in Fairbanks. So this was a process. Edna was at the computer. Aiden set up the computer for him. We brought one up for them. And then Aiden would stand in the cabin, and I would stand by the cabin door, and Haimo would be on the roof of the cabin trying to position this satellite dish in order to get the satellite. And he had to have it perfectly, otherwise we'd lose the signal. And it was 40 below at the time, and we had this succession of calls. You know, Edna, when he finally got it, Edna said, five bars. And Aiden passed that on, and I said it to Haimo, 5 bars. And Haimo said, oh, thank God, hallelujah. By the time he got down the wooden ladder that he had built, it was 2 bars. So he had to march right back up and do it again, barehanded.
So modern amenities aside, for, you know, computers and phones, those are accessories, I guess, now. But how important was it just to go out and hunt every day and fish every day for your survival, James?
Well, in summer when we were there building the cabin, I love to fish. Aiden loves to fish, but fishing became a chore. By the end of the day, we were wiped out, and the last thing we wanted to do was go and fish for our supper, but that's something we had to do. But when you live out there, as Haimo and Edna do, you bring some supplies in when you first go out in August from the city, but those supplies are quickly exhausted. So they are subsistence hunter-gatherers. They shoot now on their own 2 to 3 caribou a year and a moose, and 70-80% of their diet is meat. So it is absolutely essential that you get your meat. So you have to be a good hunter.
Now, Aidan, I understand you got some butchery training before you left Wisconsin, but what was it like field dressing a caribou and stuff in the Arctic?
It was cold. I remember Edna opened up the cavity of the caribou, and our hands were shaking. We were trying to hold the knife. And so she told me, she said, put your hands in there. And so I remember intermittently you'd put your hands in the caribou, and they'd come up steaming, and the caribou carcass was just steaming. It was wet with my hands were wet with blood, but that was the only way to do it because otherwise it was too cold.
Wow. And on this particular middle trip, the one in November, how did you keep up with schoolwork out of class for a month?
I tried to teach myself. that went okay, I guess. It went fine for English and history, and Haimo and Edna supplemented some wilderness education. Math and physics was a struggle, though.
I was about to ask if you had calculus or something at that time.
Yes. That was extremely difficult. I came back and I thought, now I can butcher a caribou. I can read the ice, but can I do physics? No.
We had somebody called in a question about the observations of the climate, which Haimo and Edna would probably be able to relate to since they live there all the time. But have they noticed changes, Jim, in the time that they've been up there? Are things getting warmer in the summer and not so cold in the winter?
Haimo's taken actually temperature readings for 25 years up there. I think that the weather is always erratic up there, but I think the winters are warming and they get more precipitation, more snow than they ever have in the past. The Arctic is a desert, and it, unlike other areas of Alaska, it does not get that much snow, but they're having to contend with more and more snow every season.
Hmm. So now to the third trip, and this was the one you'd really envisioned way back. What, in fact, I love the description of auditioning streams. What were you looking to do, Jim?
Well, we were looking to canoe or kayak one of the mighty rivers of the Alaskan Arctic. But even before that, backpack over the Brooks Range to the headwaters in one of those rivers, and we ended up canoeing out to the Arctic Ocean, I should say, in celebration of the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act. So that was the big dream trip, and that was a month long and was filled with beauty and many wonderful moments. But as Aidan said before, if you're going to be out in the wilderness, you got to be willing to work hard, and it was hard, hard work.
So, Aidan, I understand as this third trip approached, you were on a bit of a campaign to name a mountain. Explain what was going on there.
Yeah, so I started a campaign to name a mountain close to Haimo and Edna's, Colleen Ann Mountain, in honor of their daughter, who died in a river accident when she was 2 years old on the Colleen River. And Edna, she took me to the base of that mountain, and she told me the story of Colleen's death. And it's still hard for her and for Haimo to talk about. And every year they go to the top of that mountain and they put flowers on her cross up there, and they have a cross for her. And she tried initially to get the mountain named after her daughter, but the U.S. Board of Geographic Names said Colleen Ann was of no historical significance. But I argue that their family, the Korth family, and their connection with the land is in itself hugely significant. And I want her memory to live on with the land because it does for the Korth. And that's part of the reason they're still out there. They want to be out there because that's where their daughter is.
Have they exceeded yet, or is it still in the works?
It's still in the process, yeah. Mm-hmm. But okay. I have a petition going.
What happened to Colleen as a little girl is indicative of the level of danger. I mean, you don't even think about it. I mean, chainsaws and stuff like that aside, you make a wrong step in the wilderness, Jim, and you really could end up in a world of hurt.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, dangerous, awesome place, and I don't use awesome as we currently use the word awesome, but you know, that's a word that's kind of a mixture of magnificence and fear. And whatever you do when you're out there, even when you are awestruck, you have to be careful. There are so many things that can go wrong. And as I said much earlier, Haimo initially went up there for an adventure, but he's no longer an adventurous young man. You know, he knows how careful you have to be and how dangerous the Arctic can be, or wilderness in general.
Sure. And let's talk about where you did end up deciding to take this last trip. And first of all, why does Alaska have a place called the Hula Hula River, Jim?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, there's some debate about that, but the history that I think is probably most credible is that there were whale hunters from what was then called the Sandwich Islands, Hawaii, who were whaling off the coast of, working on a whaling ship off the coast of the Arctic, and saw this river that wound its way by that time through the tundra like a snake, like a hula hula snake. You know, kind of, you can see the moving of the hips. And so they named it the Hula Hula River, which I think just has, you know, just, I love, I think it's just so poetic.
How long a trip had you planned down the Hula Hula?
Well, we had planned to begin our trip at the headwaters of the Hula Hula River, and that's what we did. So we canoed class 2 to class 4 water out to the Arctic Ocean.
So a new set of skills. Aiden, had you done much whitewater before?
I had done some whitewater, but it did not prepare me for the Hula Hula. We did as much as we could, but the Hula Hula is a bony, fierce river. And there aren't just rock gardens, there are boulder gardens. And this is much different from the other trips because in the past I had deferred to my dad, but when we were in the canoe, I was in the bow of the boat, which meant that I was the captain. And so I had to pick our line through the rapids. And so initially I was very tentative and I didn't feel competent and I didn't want to give the commands and I'd wait for my dad to tell me what to do and to give me instructions. And it was chaotic and it was not working. And so finally I told him, you know, I'm going to try to do this. You're just going to have to trust me. And so after that, I started to give him directions. And by the time we reached the Arctic Ocean, I was barking orders at him and I loved being the boss. It was kind of hard to relinquish that role when I returned home, but I had to.
No doubt, but a little turnabout in the relationship along the way down that river.
I think one particular instance that stands out to me was we had just gotten through the gorge, which was the hardest section of the Hula Hula River, class 4 rapids, and we were headed for class 3 rapids, and we could not camp out. But after the gorge, I was physically and emotionally exhausted, and I had a breakdown. I started to cry. I said, Dad, I don't want to go on. And he said, you have to. It's the only choice. And so he made me go on, and I initially resented him for that, and I was mad at him. But I realized out there that was the only option. And so it was a hard relationship, too, but I'm glad we did it because that was the only choice, and sometimes you have to make those hard decisions.
Well, definitely no sag wagon to pick you up if you start failing along the way. So, Jim, give us some idea of what kind of landscape we're talking about here. I mean, we just heard from Aiden about the rock and boulder gardens in the river. Are there any trees at this point in north of the Arctic Circle?
Oh, well, there's some, you know, gravel bars with little willows on them, but other than that, no, it's just a magnificent mountain and tundra. Tundra as far as you can see. And that, you know, that there's something really beautiful about that landscape.
And who went with you? This was not just the two of you, I understand, because apparently safety in numbers is a
yeah.
good rule of thumb in the Arctic.
Well, yeah, I think it is. I think it's essential. Initially, Aiden and I we're thinking about doing it on our own, but after talking with a number of people, they said, you know, we think that's unwise, and people I respect, people who've had a lot of experience in the Arctic, trekking and canoeing and kayaking, and they said, you know, you should definitely consider bringing along another person or two. So a very good friend from Palmer, Alaska, joined me, and his friend joined us. And that friend I'd met on the Congacut River in 2000, and he had accompanied me on a trek across New Guinea, too. So I knew that he was a great traveling companion and also adept in the wilderness.
So of these three trips, Aidan, is there one place, one moment, one mental picture that you hold dearer than any other?
I think there probably is, and this is kind of a funny one, but we were trapped at the end of our third trip. We were stuck on Airy Island, as I mentioned, for 3 days and on the coast of the Arctic Ocean. And during that time, we were on the island with the polar bear. So for those 3 days, we were on bear watch. And that was scary. But I remember after the third day, the bush pilot, we finally had to get a bush pilot to come pick us up. And we got in the bush plane, and I remember turning back from the air and looking down on Airy Island, and I saw the polar bear wandering up the beach again, and as he had done countless times before. And that was my last image of Airy Island, and that's kind of one that I hold dearest, actually. I think it's a good summary of the trip, you know, facing your fears, but also the awe that that inspires.
Right, facing your fears and being able to look at your fear behind you as you get away from it.
Yeah, of course.
Yes. Jim, any one special moment above all others for you?
Well, yeah, I think that my hope in the beginning was that, you know, Aidan would come alive on these trips, that she would learn adaptability and composure and confidence and self-reliance. And I could see her building over the course of these three trips. And, you know, I think the great moment happened on the Hula Hula River when, you know, she told a bit of that story, but when she said, "Dad, okay, I think it's time. I need to be the captain of the boat. I need to pick our line. I need to bark orders." And I kind of saw her seize the moment, you know, and as a father, that was, you know, that was enormously fulfilling.
It's some great storytelling and some great stories to tell at that. Braving It, A Father, A Daughter, and An Unforgettable Journey into the Alaskan Wild. James Campbell wrote it. He and daughter Aidan made three trips into the Alaskan wilderness to make it. Thank you both for joining us today on The Exchange.
It was our pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care and best of luck in your gap year, Aidan.